Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 5, episode 5 of the Daily Zeitgeist for November. Let's call it November 10th, 2017. My name's Jack O'Brien, aka Potatoes O'Brien, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
What's up? It's the artist formerly known as Your Boy Kusama.
It's your boy. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat for her third appearance on the Daily Zeitgeist, our first three-peat. She is a hilarious stand-up and the host of one of my favorite podcasts, The Bechdel Cast. Please welcome Jamie Loftus.
Hey. Hi.
I feel like I say, please welcome, like we're at a live show and the crowd is gonna like.
Yeah, but we're in a room just looking at each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just looking at you the whole time and I'm like,
I've been here for 2 hours.
We should do a thing. Just someone has they have to keep their head down until they're introduced.
Right.
So it feels like a reveal.
That's always great at the beginning of a podcast where it's like you don't really make eye contact with your guest for the first like minute, and then you're just like, I know you're here, but I can't look at you.
Right.
Yeah. That is. I guess that's our way of making it still visual in our minds.
Yeah. I do that every single time. I just like act like the person I've been talking to for an hour doesn't exist, and then I'm like, oh hey, how are you?
Oh, and there
hey,
you are.
Look at you.
Hi.
No, I'm just bad at eye contact. I can't really. I just tried making eye contact with Miles, and it totally fucked
it didn't
my.
Go well. It's because he just got hit. He got hit with a cease and desist from Pat Riley for saying three-peat on
there. Right, exactly. Jamie, what's something you've searched in the past couple days that is revealing about who you are as a human being for our guests?
I have done a deep dive on the Yule log.
The Yule log.
Yes,
I know everything there is to know about the Yule log. There's not that much to know, but there is some Yule log drama that's gone on over the years. Yule log is the video of the log that's
burning.
Just a burning fireplace for people with no fireplace.
For people who like live in apartments and shit. And it started in New York in, I think, 1966. There's a lot of like back and forth about like, should we keep broadcasting the Yule log? Should we not keep broadcasting the Yule log? What's the copyright rules on a picture of a log burning? And now everyone has their own version of the Yule log. But the one I'd recommend is the one of Nick Offerman drinking whiskey in front of a Yule log for 10 hours.
That's a great one.
The current, but I've watched them all. I've vetted them all.
Have you seen the 4K one on Netflix?
I have.
Yeah, use that one.
That's a pretty good one.
Yo, it's crazy that you say that because I fuck with the Yule log.
You're a Yule log fan?
Oh my God. Dude, let me tell you, I'm a pyromaniac by trade. Little known fact. And some would say amateur arsonist, but I.
Oh, you dabble?
Yeah, I dabble.
The police would say
I'm an
that.
Aspiring arsonist, right. I would say. No, but like, I always loved fireplaces. And then when I moved, you know, in LA, there aren't many places that actually have fireplaces.
Yeah.
So like, when you turn the heat up and have the Yule log on, it just feels cozy. And like in 4K, it's like, it's next level. But now I got a fireplace, so if you want the real thing, come through.
Dude, I got really into it, and then I like wrote up a bunch of, and now I'm gonna make my own Yule log this year.
Oh, dope!
I'm gonna do it. Yeah,
like a marathon video.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to make a narrative Yule log.
Does he just drink whiskey in silence for 10 hours?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. They must have found the perfect looping point because it's like a 10-hour video.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
What's something you believe to be overrated?
I mean, I went to Del Taco again.
You say that like you're an addict.
No.
I went to Del Taco.
No, for like the third time. I've lived here for 2 years. I went to Del Taco for like the third time. I keep giving Del Taco another chance. But it's just not as good as Taco. Like, I live close to a Del Taco. It makes more sense for me to go to a Del Taco. But then I always end up, my new thing is I order delivery from Taco Bell. Which is like, who are you? Princess Di? Like, why do you order delivery from Taco Bell? And the delivery person's always very pissed off about it, which is totally fair.
Right. That is a straight up Princess Di move.
There it is.
Bring me my chalupa.
Princess Di Aria.
Hey!
Wordplay!
Mr. Comedy.
I'll leave.
Mr. Comedy.
So I think that going to Del Taco just because it's closer, overrated.
What do you get at Del Taco?
Del Taco. I mean, I get the cheapest garbage available from both places. I got the half pound, and I would put that in quotations, the half pound bean and rice burrito from Del Taco, and also the tiniest little shake I've ever had, which is really cute. And then I got French fries from Del Taco, which you got to hand it to them. They do have
They got the French fries.
Also, and they're pretty good.
Hey, another trip, go bold. That's where you put the fries in your burrito.
Whoa.
Is that like secret menu shit?
A
little off the menu shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first time I tried to order it, I messed up at the drive-thru. I was like, I thought it was called Go Extreme. And I was like, yeah, let me go extreme. And the guy in the drive-thru was like, what? And I got so nervous because, like, I don't, you know, just like human nature, you don't want to seem stupid. So I was just like, nothing, just regular.
Yeah. As a person, I lack the confidence to order off the secret menu.
It's
a risk.
Yeah. It's a risk, baby. Yeah, because yeah, again, that reaction, huh?
Right.
Shook me to my fucking core, and I just abandoned my plan.
You're like, never again. The other thing that I would say is extremely overrated is trivia night.
Yeah.
I gave Trivia Night. Trivia Night is for losers with no personality.
Wow.
They got it. That's my, I went to a, I accidentally found myself at a Geeks Who Drink night. I thought I was just enjoying time with my friends and then suddenly kamikazed by all these losers bringing in their pizza, having these stupid team names called like, oh, we're the Trivia Butts and we know what year a Gorillaz album came out. And I'm like, get the fuck out of, like, I was just,
right.
This bar was fun 20 minutes ago, and then there's an Australian lady. She's asking questions, and it's just like, and they're like, you have to draw something. I was like, I had to get out of here.
Oh, so it was more that like the trivia night just invaded your normal bar time, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Or
and
you participated.
I ended up participating, and I ended up
you
getting
swept up in a trivia night,
and I got really into it, and then I sucked at it, and then I left.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, work on your trivia game.
Yeah. Also, trivia night is. Yeah, I agree. Trivia night to me feels like loud music at a bar where it's just like, so you guys don't like talking when, like, the whole reason that I would drink is because it's like the one time I like to talk to other people is while drinking.
And also,
yeah, they like play a game to sort of mediate that.
I'll say the good thing about trivia night is like the friend that you're with who thinks that they're way fucking smarter than everyone always gets put to shame at trivia night because I'm like, oh, you actually don't know shit. It's the dumb guy. The dumb guy knows when every Gorillaz album came out. What do you know?
This was a very specific, just Gorillaz-themed trivia night.
I was hanging with my college friends, which is like also a mistake.
And, also overrated. What's something that's underrated?
Something that's underrated. Ooh, something that's underrated. Oh, okay, so I fell into this wormhole recently about how the old Hollywood actress Hedy Lamarr invented Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
so
she did.
Underrated
what?
Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, she was like this.
First of all, I don't know who Hedy Lamarr is, so sorry, apologies on that. What was she in?
Here's a pic. She was
She's like, okay.
She's in a lot of famous, like World War II era movies.
Yes, yes, the golden age.
But she like literally dabbled in inventing on the side and made some, like basically a primitive version of Wi-Fi. And people just started talking about it a couple years ago. And there was like a great feature written on it, in PRI that I read recently. That's just like, holy shit, she invented Wi-Fi. Just like, Errol Morris's brother invented email.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So, shout out to the golden age of Hollywood.
Yeah.
For without which we would have no Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not like Jennifer Aniston like invented like
she invented spinning
fidget spinner.
Yeah. She may have.
I'm very here for that rumor.
Right.
We should start that here.
That
right. Do you guys know that Jennifer Aniston invented the fidget spinner?
Yeah. No way.
I knew she was involved with the team that did the fidget cube, but I wasn't aware that she did the spinner. Okay,
yeah,
good to know.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna get into format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world. Whether you're looking or not, there's this big tangle of ideas and assumptions and beliefs out there that kind of make up our conventional wisdom, and conventional wisdom has sort of a gravitational pull on our day-to-day lives. We talk about politics, the president, news, but we also talk about movies and supermarket tabloids, which we're going to be taking a look at today. But before we get into some news stories, we like to ask our guest to debunk something, disabuse our audience of some notion that they have based on like movie or media.
Disabuse is a good vocab word.
Thank you.
I haven't heard that word in a long time. Maybe since the SATs. Okay, so I have a very topical myth I'd like to discuss and debunk today, which is a lot of stuff that you'll hear, you know, people sliding into the mentions defending their heroes. when they're outed as sex crims, etc.
And for the unlearned, a sex crim is a...
A sex criminal, okay, which is also my favorite comic book. Anyways.
Sex crims, etc.
Sex crims, etc. That's LLC is my company. Right. A lot of like what people are hearing who don't want to believe stuff that's coming out is that, you know, it's like, well, this is just accusations, it's just speculation, and news outlets can basically report anything, or they can report speculation. And that, in my experience as a writer and a journalist, has been the opposite of true, where you have to have so much and jump through so many hoops, where stuff with like the Louis C.K. story, it's like a miracle that it came out, and it took years and years to amass enough evidence for it to be reported in the New York Times. So that for me, it's like super frustrating to hear and doesn't track, because there are writers who have been trying to bust the story open for years. And we were talking about Megan Keister, who's been trying to do it forever. And the news standards are so strict in getting stories like this out that there's a lot of stories that won't be reported or will take a lot longer to be reported. In my experience, I was trying to break a story on a man in power in this area, and, you know, had everything set up, had worked with fact checkers, had worked with a source, had worked with all this stuff, and then it still couldn't go to press, basically.
Did the source back out, or did...
the source backed out of, you know, anxiety and totally understand, and you know, sources have to do this on their own timeline, but it's really hard to move forward with a story. And I have a writer colleague who was trying to break a similar story, but the news source she was working with wouldn't report it before she had three different sources who would say that this man had sexually harassed them, and she had two sources. And so sometimes it reaches the point where it's like, oh, so are we waiting for this person to strike again,
right,
before we can report this? Like, that's so like weird and insidious that, you know, everyone involved when you're reporting a story like this is taking a risk of sorts, and so the argument that it's like, it's just speculation, we don't know.
You can write anything in there.
Right.
Right. Like, there's
so much.
It's
not the case. I mean, it's because these huge corporations, like, take a risk. They can be sued, and their legal departments, the only thing that their job is responsible to is to their board members and to their shareholders.
Right, and make sure there's
to make
no
sure
kind of legal...
You don't, like, cost us millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
So, yeah, that's... When I worked at ABC News, we had this big story. Like, a lot of the stuff that people are still reporting about Trump, we had this big story done by the investigative journalism team that was, like, all about all these weird financial improprieties and that he, like, wasn't worth as much money as they thought. But then Donald Trump just started calling and calling and calling and threatening to sue, until the legal team was just like, you can't, like, say basically any of the important stuff. And it was like this weird defanged, like, piece of shit story by the end of it.
It's and the legal departments are so intense too, that I think that, like, with the story I was working on, the legal department sort of ended up scaring my source out of wanting to report the story, because there are so many, like, they're doing their due diligence to an extent of being like, okay, you know, everything is fact checked, but here are the possible repercussions and this and this and this and this. But it's like, you know, to get a story like that published, by the time it gets reported by the New York Times, you know, there's like very little that I wouldn't believe, especially in regards to a story like this, because it's so fucking vetted.
Right. Yeah, the Ronan Farrow Weinstein story was, like, thrown out. He was a full-time NBC employee, and then NBC, like, said no to reporting this story that he had been building for, like, a year. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you can only imagine the fear of these people when you have companies like Black Cube working for these predators and, like, trying to intimidate people.
Yeah, we talked about Black Cube earlier this week. For new listeners, it's a sort of private investigator firm that, like, has Mossad agents and, like, former intelligence officials that were working for Harvey Weinstein, you know, investigating Rose McGowan and like...
Again, and other people who were accusing him.
Yeah, it's crazy shit. While we're on the subject, we might as well do our daily sex crim roundup.
Sex crims.
So Louis C.K., we talked about yesterday, and I think we talked about actually the last time you were on, Jamie, because...
Yeah. So we're talking about Woody Allen.
Yeah, we were talking about you guys had just done Manhattan, and he has like a Ode to Manhattan movie called I Love You, Daddy.
That the world may never see.
Yeah, it might become like that Jerry Lewis Holocaust comedy that like he ended up taking off the market because, yeah, the... I guess it's now no longer being released, even though they paid millions of dollars for it at a film festival. So Louis C.K. Was openly finally accused of sexual misconduct on various sets yesterday by five different women. Probably the creepiest detail of it, like all of it was creepy. He likes to masturbate in front of women who don't want to be masturbated in front of. And at one point he apologized to one of the women for pushing her into a dressing room and masturbating in front of her. And she was like, that wasn't me. So
that was,
there's probably other things out there.
This has probably been, and I mean, based on, like, I had heard of it, and I think a lot of people in the industry had heard of it.
Well, this was first reported by Gawker in 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, he has come out and said these things these women said are true. And Jamie, as you put it, he kind of gave, like, a reverse Oscar acceptance speech where he, like, apologized to, like, his family, to his... agent, to his manager,
to the cast and crew of I Love You, Daddy.
Right, exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ.
The biggest thing missing from all of this are the words maybe like sorry or like I apologize. I mean, it's definitely like he's remorseful and things like that, but it's a very, I mean, the one of the weirdest things is that like he's actually just saying I never showed a woman my dick without asking first.
Yeah,
which is also true.
Super cash reference to your dick.
Yeah,
like a an apology for sexual misconduct.
I think you need to handle this a little bit more delicately, Mr.
Right.
CK.
The way that this feels, I mean, it seems like kind of just like that is the way that Louis C.K. would make this apology. But that doesn't, like, he needs to, like, take a look at himself and apologize in a way that is not how a stand-up comedian would apologize for whipping his dick out.
Right.
Like
it read like a Louis C.K., like, in the voice of Louis C.K., the comedian.
Like a Louis episode.
Yeah.
Like, which
right. But, yeah, so it starts out in his voice sort of talking about what happened. But then, like, he goes into – it's almost like he just does an adequate job technically explaining the power dynamics at play. But it's like, we get it. We got it when we read the article. These women understood what was happening and, like, what you didn't get about the situation. But, it seems like he lays everything out and then rather than apologizing, really just, like, kind of says, I'm going to take a step back and think about things. So,
yeah, again, apologizing to all the things that are in production and then, like, companies that are paying your bills is, like,
that's a private.
Yeah, you don't need to. Like, what the fuck are you doing, man? This is not about FX or, you
and
know.
And that is the bulk of the apology, too.
It's a pretty lengthy paragraph.
And that's, he is actively fucking people over who work for him and with him. That's, like, not even an invalid thought, but that's not a part of
the public
apology.
Yeah, the people that
apology.
Are most directly affected
you
are
could also
women.
Just reach out it's directly to them
over.
In private.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be a public apology to them. Sorry, guys. We got a lot of sex crims to get to. Judge Roy Moore, apparently, the polls are tightening in Alabama, so he is losing ground, even though for people who haven't heard, Judge Roy Moore, who is the Republican candidate in Alabama to take over the seat that was vacated by Jefferson Beauregard Sessions when he took over as the attorney general, is so there's actually a race. Like, nobody expected there to be a race, but because of, you know, the way things are going in the country. Democrat was like within 8 points of him. And then it came out yesterday that he had.
They're leveling up. Yeah. Very close. It's neck and neck now.
And it came out yesterday that he had attempted to have like sexual relationships with a 14-year-old girl and other teenage girls when he was 32. Some of the excuses that have come out, Marion County Chairman David Hall has said, I really don't see the relevance of it. He was 32. She was supposedly 14. She's not saying anything happened other than they kissed. And if they did just kiss, that's just a weird defense, seeing as the main problem is he's 32, she's 14. You're not supposed to kiss 14-year-olds when you're 32. Just go read the actual details because it's way, way worse than that. He took her to his house and, like, they disrobed
very
and stuff.
Disturbing.
She's a 14-year-old, and he, like, their clothes off.
The other one was the Alabama State Auditor was trying to compare, like, the relationship of Mary and Joseph.
Right.
Like, to this. I mean, again, this is how fucking depraved. And how low the GOP has gone, which is like trying to figure out like logical, rational defenses against someone who is accused of like statutory rape.
Yeah. I mean, and that's very specific members of the GOP. But yeah, that's problematic.
Well, again, I think there
are other people who are like, yo, he needs to step out.
I mean, John McCain is one who's unequivocally said this is disqualifying, but he's in a minority, which I think is a little, it was what should be. People need to really kind of think about.
Right. And so Moore yesterday sent a funding email to his followers being like, look, the devil is trying to get to me and like knock me out of this race. Like, give me funding so that we can like continue to fight the good fight. So, yeah, it's just worth keeping an eye on. But it's not a thing where he's coming out and saying, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to take some time to think about.
No, he literally blamed like the forces of evil.
Right.
So.
And it's great because it's like if he loses, that really does make it more likely that the Democrats can like win. In 2018. I mean, like him losing would be a big
him
deal.
Losing would be a really it would change the Senate math.
Yeah.
Pretty significantly to have another seat go blue. But yeah, I'm sure that's one of the reasons why there are people like Mitch McConnell who really don't want Roy Moore there. I don't even sure if it's because he's problematic, but more so because he's worried about the vote math in the Senate.
Right.
And just mm-hmm. like, well, we need a Republican that can win. So.
Right.
Right.
And I'm not sure, like, if they can just swap somebody in at this point,
they
would have to, like, do another runoff election or something.
I think he would have to withdraw. And then the party could put someone, but it would take him to step down, which is why some people are saying maybe they can get Luther Strange to be a write-in candidate.
Right.
But this is all very
The thing is, like, there are, like, rules about how far in advance of a race you have to drop out. Like, I was reading it was 76 days, which is, like, way past, because it's, like, less than a month.
Yeah, it's in December.
But there's also been, like, past examples of that. Sort of being overruled by the Supreme Court, it all sort of just depends in whose favor they're tilted at the time. So,
yeah. All right. We have other sex crimes to talk about, but we're running out of time. Johnny Depp, it's worth remembering, has a movie coming out today, and he beat up his girlfriend last year. So keep an eye out for that, folks. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Jamie, you were saying during the break that Graham Norton had an episode where he was talking mad shit about Weinstein.
Right, yeah, just kind of like
And you disapprove of that, right? Because you're a big fan of Big Harv, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm pro-Harv, and right. That was the end of the fight.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, moving on.
But on Graham Norton, it's just like another double standard-y moment where there's an episode of Graham Norton recently where he's denouncing Harvey Weinstein, which is like, yeah, duh. It's not a hot take by any means. And then his guest, or one of his guests, was Johnny Depp and the cast of The Murder on the Orient Express. And it's like, oh, we're just going to act like he didn't hit his wife on tape? Totally cool. Great.
Right. Yeah, as long as he wears like a silly fake mustache, it's easy to ignore that it's him, I think. Hey, you guys, it's Veterans Day.
Happy... Well, tomorrow will be Veterans Day.
Tomorrow, and today is Veterans Day observed.
Observed, yes.
By other people, not by us.
Not by us.
We still work for you guys. We're
exactly.
still out here making that content. 1, 2, 3, content. That's how we open every day of work. Put our hands in the middle. So we wanted to just do a quick rundown of some of the most badass soldiers in the history of war. And also some badass veterans who have brought to us great things. So I want to talk about the Finnish sniper known as the White Death. I'm going to butcher.
This is not a comic book character?
No, this is not a comic book character. Real dude, a farmer in like Finland. He went off into the woods with his hunting rifle and ended up killing 500 Russians just by himself. They ended up winning the war despite being so outnumbered. And he was just this like legend / ghost story that the Russians talked about. He would put snow in his mouth. I think I've seen this in a movie, but he would put snow in his mouth when he was shooting so they couldn't see the like
hot,
like the heat of his breath, like the fog of
Whoa.
His breath.
Are you sure he's not a comic book
character?
Yeah,
I know. It's pretty badass. And he would put a glove under his rifle, between the rifle and the ground, so to dampen the jolt of the weapon. And doing that, he killed, like, everyone.
What'd they call him again? Snowboy?
White Death.
Snowboy.
White Death.
Snowboy's pretty cool, too. Then during World War II, moving over to the Russian side, during World War II, we have a female battalion called the Night Witches by the Nazi soldiers because... So they had access to really, really shitty planes. Basically, they were made of like plywood and canvas, generally reserved for training and crop dusting. But what they would do is, first of all, when they got into dogfights in the air with actual German like fighter planes, they would actually do okay because the planes were like when they were going at full speed, planes couldn't even go like nearly as slow as them. So they could like sort of dive and like turn on a dime. But their main thing was bombing. They would like turn off their engine and just glide over camps and then drop bombs on the camps. And because of the sort of soft whooshing noises that they made, the Germans thought they were witches flying on their brooms. But
they didn't think that, right?
Yeah, they thought they were.
They actually thought witches
really?
Were bombing.
No. Yeah.
Oh.
No, of course not.
I don't know. I mean, like, you never know back
right.
then.
Right.
Right. It was
they
like,
didn't have Google.
Go back like 75 years plus, I would believe people believe literally
right.
anything.
Right. And I mean, I don't know. Like, if you're hearing weird whooshing sounds in the sky and
it's
then everything around you blows up, like, you're gonna probably. It doesn't matter what you believe it is, but they were from ages 17 to 26, and they dropped 23,000 tons of bombs on invading
young,
Germany.
The hot young bombers.
Yeah.
Wait, exactly. Which country they fought for?
Russia.
Wow.
And this was when Germany invaded Russia, so this was like basically the turning point of the war.
Shout out to the Night Witches.
That sounds terrifying, but also like what a cool name for a club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Night Witches.
Gonna get those jackets made up?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my new trivia team name.
The Night Witches.
And then on the American side, we have John York, who was just a redneck from Tennessee, who went over to World War I as a conscientious objector, but eventually picked up a machine gun because his battalion got completely obliterated. Everyone besides him was shot to pieces by this battalion of 32 German machine gunners, and he picked up a machine gun and like basically took out 20 of the Germans, and then 5 of them came around to flank him. He killed them with a Colt 45, and then the Germans were like, hey, could you stop killing us and we'll surrender? And so he walked 133 German soldiers back into his camp like at gunpoint.
Wait, solo Dolomite?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, John York.
John York from Tennessee.
And then Audie Murphy is just a total badass. Another, like, really small guy. I guess the White Death was a tiny man.
Snowboy.
Yeah, Snowboy was a tiny man.
Snowmouth.
So his best friend got killed in Italy by a German machine gun crew. And he just like hulked out and killed everyone in the gun nest, then used their gun to kill every Nazi soldier in a 100-yard radius, including two more machine gun nests and a bunch of snipers. Then he was given the job of defending like a super important pocket in France. And all he had left at the end was 19 guys out of an original 128. And he was 5'6". And
oh, also, he's like cute.
Super cute. Like, ended up being a movie star.
Yeah.
Jumped behind a 50 caliber machine gun and started killing everything in sight. But the machine gun was on a vehicle that was on fire and like getting ready to explode, and he just didn't give a shit. And,
like GTA style.
Yeah, just won the war, like fighting like single-handedly by just like jumping on this flaming vehicle and just taking everything out. So he got, I think he's one of the most decorated soldiers in the history of war.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of pictures of him just covered in various badges.
Right.
Can't recommend.
He had like a second jacket for like the other medals. He couldn't even put on the other one.
Yeah, because they weighed more than he did. Dude, slide into Google Images on this guy. He's a cutie pie.
Audie Murphy.
Yeah. Audie Murphy.
And then, Miles, you looked into some contributions from veterans after they came home from war.
Because, look, yeah, I mean, there's like a very big spirit of entrepreneurship for veterans. And we have a lot of businesses to this day that we can thank because of veterans. For example, I mean, look, let me do some of the serious ones, like Remax, okay? Like the real estate company. That was founded or co-founded by an Air Force veteran, okay? Pretty
cool.
Good. Sperry
cool.
Shoes.
I see there are signs all over the place.
Yeah, Sperry's. Cool. Not just a boat shoe for frat boys in the Northeast,
right.
But again, made by a Naval veteran, Paul Sperry. Okay, cool. All FedEx. Right. Marine, Fred Smith founded FedEx. Sadly, Walmart, the most evil company. Sam Ooh. Walton was an Army veteran. So, I mean, look, we can, I don't, you know, we'll cut that one. Fuck,
we'll
Walmart.
Forgive you guys for that one because of some of the contributions we have coming up.
Yes. And, you know, again, GoDaddy was also started by a Marine Corps veteran. So, hey.
And that's the contribution I'm talking about. Love
a
those GoDaddy.
GoDaddy ads.
But to me, some of the best ones, the best contributions.
Here we go.
Mr. Glenn Bell, a Marine who fought in the Pacific Theater in World War II, founded Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So little do you know, your Taco Bell love, that's actually a very patriotic
that's
act.
Super patriotic.
So actually, if you think about it, Americans, if you're going to pick one, go with Taco Bell.
Yeah, if you want Americanized Mexican food.
Yeah, to the most offensive form of Mexican food, go to Taco Bell because, hey, shout out to Glenn Bell. Also,
nice.
Mike Ilitch, founder of Little Caesars, who's done a lot of good stuff. The guy was also a Marine. So Little Caesars we have to thank because of the Marine Corps, and also Domino's Pizza.
Right.
And not
founded
to say
by a kind of a weird dude.
yeah, I mean, look. Again,
weird Catholic, super crazy, over-the-top Catholic.
But again, to say these contributions, Dave, in one way or another, we have interacted with this. So, yes, thank you, everybody, for your service and also some of your contributions, especially to the fast food world.
Yeah. The Marines are badasses. And, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, friends who go into the Marines as total fucking messes and come out as, like, really polished, like, great human beings and, like, really have their shit together. So, yeah. Thanks, everyone, for your service. We appreciate it.
And also, I'm sure we're going to get flooded with mentions of, like, all the other things that veterans have created. Look, this we were doing this just sort of on the fly, so no offense to anybody out there.
But please, we're happy to get your mentions.
Let me know. Put me on to knowledge also, too. Yeah.
I was trying to look up some fun celebrity military ones that aren't like, always brought up. And the closest I found was Fred Durst dropped out of boot camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he just kept on rolling.
He
rolling.
Hey, you guys, Taylor Swift has an album out. Speaking of Fred Durst. Yeah. Stuff.
smooth transition.
Yeah.
That's a pivot.
It's
big news
know.
For some people.
It is big news.
Yeah.
There's a song about Kanye on the album.
Predictably.
Supposedly, talks about someone who she was glad to be friends with, but then like he tricked her,
rained on
like,
her parade.
There's even talk of like a phone call going back to that famous. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, look, I don't like pop music. I don't like most music, to be honest. I'm kind of like really set in my ways of what I like about music.
Right.
This album is like super derivative. It sounds like, you know, again, like everything, it's probably every song probably will be a hit because she is a pretty prolific songwriter just based off her track record. But also, I gotta say, we may have to say RIP to trap hi-hats, because the trap sound, there's a lot of trap touches on this album. If you guys aren't familiar with, like, the trap sound, it's the 808 drum kit, a lot of snare chains, a lot of syncopated hi-hats, and you hear it a lot. I mean, it's all over pop music. And again, I don't know, is it, does that mean it's RIP? I don't know, but again, definitely taking from all styles of music. And the reviews are kind of very interesting. Like, everybody is, like, talking about this album in a way that is so serious.
Right.
It's like, almost confusing.
It's like it's a new Beatles album. Like, I feel like that's the seriousness it's been.
Right.
It feels a little, like, weird and, like, uncanny valley the way people talk about it. Because we were able to find one bad review of this album.
Which is, like, outside of the realm of, like, traditional, music blogs or magazines that write about music.
Especially, like, you know, outlets that you're like, oh, they would go after a pop album because they want to sound smart and too good for it.
Right.
But, like, the New York Times, Rolling Stone, like, they're like, this is the new Taylor Swift is here.
Been more coherent, or like the way they're describing it, it sounds, you would think they're talking about like a Radiohead album, and then it's like, well, these, I guess something can be as complex as you want it to be and look at it that way. But I just feel like
it's weird. I mean, I like pop music too. Like the Lord album is like one of my favorite albums of the year, and that I felt like deserved all of the praise it got, and I like totally loved it. But just I don't know. It felt weird hearing like, oh, we have no criticism of this kind of derivative.
Well,
Taylor
I'm
Swift
sure she
album.
Has a very powerful PR machine.
I do feel like this is like part of a, like, for at least the past 15 years, sort of the overall trend has been to buy in on like pop and whatever is popular and like whatever the story is that, you know, some popular person is trying to sell about themselves, like from a PR perspective. I feel like we now are more likely to buy in. And like that includes the New York Times and the Washington Post and like all those, which I feel like is fun in some instances, but I also feel like it's a little dangerous because then everything is just going with the sort of grain of straight up consumerism.
Right.
Like, when I was a kid, we used to have a thing called like selling out where you would like be, you would
wait
like,
a second, explain this concept.
Where, you mean buying in?
Right. Where you would be like, man, they sold out. They like,
yeah, this is
which
trash.
Which was like stupid sometimes. Like it was annoying when like people would be like, I liked Nirvana before Nevermind. Nevermind's when they sold out or whatever. But, I do think that's a valuable like concept to have in your culture, like, because you don't really hear about it anymore.
It's just or like change that feels a little insincere or just for the sake of keeping up with what will keep you relevant.
Right.
And in the case of Taylor Swift, that argument is almost kind of like invalid because it's like, when would she have even had the opportunity to sell out? Like, she kind of started at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. She's definitely a creature of this trend where it's like,
it is weird.
There's no such thing as selling out because everybody's bought in.
She's been a consumer product from moment one.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, it's again, I think it's like musing about like a Filet-O-Fish sandwich in a food review.
Right.
It's like, yo, this shit is not that complex. Like,
right.
You can just say, hey, solid pop album, pretty good. You don't have to like be like, the way she softened black music, blah, blah. The New York Times said that. I'm like, yo, what are you saying?
Weird.
You're talking about
the New York Times review. Yeah.
Straight up thievery. Anyway, do your thing, guys. If you like Taylor Swift, good for you. I don't.
Right. It sounds a lot like, you can hear the Jack Antonoff in there. The song that where she talks shit about Kanye sounds almost identical to that fun song tonight.
Tonight.
Which
him?
Yeah. I really like that song.
That's how ignorant I am of like that.
Jack,
one.
I'm such an asshole.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I like that song. I like
fun.
Shake It Off.
Good
I like
for you.
Shake It Off. Dude, this is like the thing with Taylor Swift is like I don't like what she represents, like, but I'm gonna end up getting stuck on one of the songs on this fucking album. I don't know which one it is yet.
Right.
But it's gonna be one of them. I'm gonna feel guilty as hell about it. I'm gonna listen to it 500 times.
Right. Like in a dark closet somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly. With headphones on. Yeah. Where's Jamie?
I can't pass any reflective surfaces.
All right, we're going to go to a second commersh, as our producer Nick calls them, and we'll be right back after that. And we're back. And we're here to talk about Bloids, baby.
Bloid Watch.
So, as we've talked about before, all the tabloids are made by, like, one publisher. It is a guy named David Pecker, lives in New York.
That's his real name.
Very strange fellow. Big Donald Trump fan and a friend of Donald Trump, so you will never see a negative thing about Donald Trump in
Which,
the pages.
What a missed opportunity.
I know.
And only negative things about people who criticize
Like
Donald
Hillary
Trump.
Clinton gets hit, like I think 90% of the time in their editorial office is spent looking for pictures of Hillary Clinton where it looks like she's like holding a sneeze in. Cause,
yeah, they have to.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, oh, that's a great photo. Let's just make up a cover story about that.
Right. So I guess one question I have for them is like, where were they on all these Hollywood sex scandals? Like the, cause they always talk about how they're like first to report on stuff, but,
right.
We didn't hear shit about Kevin Spacey from y'all. We didn't hear anything about Charlie Sheen, assaulting little boys from you guys.
Well, if they're in Trump's pocket, they're probably pretty, triggered by men being outed as sexual predators.
Right. That's true. That's true. The one thing that they've been ahead of everyone else at is telling you when a celebrity is like near death. Sometimes they go a little early,
but like they double down a little.
The front pages of these, tabloids was the first time I saw anybody say that Steve Jobs was dying or that Patrick Swayze was dying. And, we unfortunately have, an example of that this week with, Val Kilmer. Does not look good for Val Kilmer, apparently. He is battling cancer and does not look great right now. So that sucks.
Pour one out
that's
for
like
Val.
The one Pour thing one we Val. Will take the tabloid seriously. Like, yeah, that's a fucking bummer.
They do seem to be on that shit.
Dude, in Star this week, there is a sponsored ad on the cover of the magazine.
There's a sponsored ad on the front?
Dude, yeah, Slim Fast, see page 4, sponsored.
Wow.
Wow. We're not doing well over there,
Prince
Star,
Prince is dead,
huh?
Gang.
Yeah. The fucking covers are just going to be ads pretty soon.
Yeah.
Right? That's Pandora's box being opened right
that's,
there.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants a Slim Fast, see page 4.
Okay.
In Touch has a story. It is a picture of Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. It says, Brad and Jen, a second chance at love. And I was like, oh, my God, they're getting back together. And everyone in the room was like, no, they're not. Like, that would be the only thing people were talking about if they were getting back together.
Also, didn't they break up like 15 years ago
it's
or
so
something?
It's so strange. Like,
well, yeah, why do I guess people still ship them?
People
like,
are still
in their
holding
fantasy
a candle
words,
for
like,
them.
Like 50% of our cultural conscience is made up of like just wanting these two to like have sex
right.
with one another. Like it's just, yeah.
You could suffocate a person in all the speculative coverage.
I know. Exactly.
It's weird. If they got back together, what would they write about? The coverage would immediately then be
that
like, they're about to break
that.
Up.
What if that, yeah.
It's like, they're together, but this is why it won't last.
Or maybe that's like the nail in the coffin of print
that's how
they can like, save well, us all. Yeah, save us all. Just get back together, Brad and
we've run out
Jennifer.
Of topics.
What were they called? Did that predate like celebrity mashup names for couples?
Renifer or?
Oh, whoa.
Joe,
did they not?
Yeah.
Dread?
Branifer.
If you
Branifer.
Drad.
On YouTube, you can still see like there was like a special on Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez planning their wedding that never happened, and it is one of the most moving pieces of television.
Really?
You've ever seen.
Moving
yeah,
in what
yeah.
sense? Because you're witnessing true love in action?
You're witnessing true love and you know it's gonna fall apart.
Oh, so it's tragic from the standpoint that you know what the ending is. So it's
yeah,
like, oh, you
literally
fools.
All they're talking about is their wedding that never happens. It's great.
God.
Good for them.
Miley Cyrus and someone named Liam have apparently been married secretly.
Someone married named before Liam. Or something? Maybe I'm making this up. It doesn't. Ultimately, who cares?
And
no, they were. They her and Liam Hemsworth. That's the
yeah, that's
the lesser known Hemsworth. Is what they had been dating, right? They just were never
they
wed.
Like had, I think that yeah, maybe they were like engaged and then broke up and then got back together and now they're married or something like that. But they were like on and off,
just like your favorite high school couple.
I know,
you know.
Well, our favorite high school couple is Branifer.
Bradifer. Bradifer.
That's terrible.
That's yeah. You know, maybe that's like it never could have worked. There
yeah,
was
yeah.
snappy
not a good
name.
One. And Us Weekly announces to us in big yellow letters that Ben Affleck's lucky to be alive because he's battling an addiction. So
they've been saying that for a couple weeks now, right?
Yeah, yeah, they've been all about that. Because his face is getting a little puffy, and I think he has been.
Ben Affleck's been puffy.
In and out of rehab.
Yeah, before Puff Daddy was even puffy.
Right. He was.
My favorite thing is in the Globe, a world exclusive, guys. Please put on your seatbelts, write down your emergency contact, because you may pass out when you read this news. World exclusive, Malia Obama questioned an FBI probe, Barack and Michelle's worst nightmare. All the details inside. I mean, look at this cover. She looks like a drug dealing fucking murderer.
They've got her like eyes like half closed.
They've got her mid-blink. Yeah.
Yeah, she looks like, fuck out of here. I'm Malia. Do something. Okay. Right. And then when you go in, you're like, oh my God, what kind of shit did Malia get into?
It gets wild.
Oh, wow. Guess what? Malia Obama caught up in Weinstein sex probe. So again, the Globe is trying to tie the Weinstein controversy to the Obamas to basically say like they're sex crime enablers or something like that.
Right, and because she was an intern there over the summer.
And then, you know, despite the fact that she actually left before the stories, they're saying that the FBI wants to grill her in a hush-hush deposition as part of their quest to charge Weinstein. So, again, look, first of all, this news has not even been reported anywhere, so I don't know how the fuck they got this idea, aside from just trying to peg
this. This was like one of those things, I feel like they just threw darts at various buzzwords. They're like, Obama,
Well,
Malia.
They're desperate for Malia Obama to, like, have some sort of problem, because they've been telling stories since we've been paying attention to the tabloids. They've been talking about her being, like, out of control.
Yeah,
because
she, like, went to a concert, like, she was spotted smoking a funny cigarette at a music
festival.
6 months
ago.
Yeah, and then, like, in August, the Obama's little girl went berserk, rolling on the ground in a frenzy at a Chicago music fest. She was at Lollapalooza. She's 19 years old.
Right.
She went wild out of some rock music. She didn't lose her mind.
Right.
And also, like, how the fuck... In my mind, I think Malia is probably, like, really works the angle that her dad is Barack Obama, because, like, this is some shit only Malia and Sasha can say. Like, the FBI show up, they're like, hey, we want to talk to you, Malia. It's like, what the fuck do you want? We got to, you know, what do you know about Harvey Weinstein? Like, are you fucking kidding? My dad is fucking Obama.
And they're
back my dad the is fuck fucking up. Obama is the greatest.
She probably should use that at a nightclub. They're like, okay, you're not 21. Do you know who my fucking dad is? It's Obama.
My dad is literally Obama.
So back the fuck off. So again, this is just really, really great groundbreaking journalism from the Globe.
I mean, can't believe it. Unbelievable.
They have an inset photo of Barack Obama with his finger over his mouth, like, shh, don't be talking about Weinstein sex crimes, will you?
And then a picture of Weinstein looking like a mob boss.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. Good luck connecting those dots, the Globe.
So, and the only claim that they have in there is that the FBI wants to question her.
Yeah, not that she has been or anything like
that. The desire among, quote, the FBI.
And then being like, oh, they think... quote, they want to find out what she saw while working as a Weinstein intern, spills a Washington, D.C. source for the purpose of this article.
Right.
And then they think Malia has explosive information, even though she resigned before the sleazy stories of Weinstein sex abuse. So don't try now they're trying to drag her up in this mess like she's sitting on like a treasure trove of information.
Was that last part in quotes from the Washington source? They think she has explosive information.
Yes, that is also in quotes.
So that this is our favorite thing about the tabloids, is that you can hear like the tabloid writing, like headline writing voice in the quotes from their alleged sources. Like nobody says shit like, they think she has explosive details about the sleazy sleazoid. It's like, no, dude, that's how you write. That is, but they always attribute it to
that's
a Washington source.
Classic unnamed source rhetoric.
Right, exactly.
They all talk the fucking same way.
Right.
Yeah.
How you want them to, because they're made up.
But the reason we pay attention to the tabloids is because millions of people pass by them every day. So they're seeing these headlines and absorbing all this nonsense.
Yeah. Also, you know, Malia, keep your head up.
Yeah.
You know, don't and don't snitch. You know what I mean? You know the code of the streets.
Yeah, I heard you might have some.
My dad is literally Obama.
Get the fuck away from me. My dad is Obama. Move. I hope she's not like a bad person, because I would.
I kind of hope
if I could say that.
I mean, it would be so easy.
Oh fuck! If I could seriously say my dad is Obama, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't even be doing this podcast. I would just be treating Uber drivers so rude.
I mean, any kid of a president, like especially when they were like, if they were kids when they were in the like, that's got to be so hard to be like a normal ass person after that.
Well, Chelsea Clinton seems okay.
She seems all right. Yeah, Jenna Bush tried stand-up. You guys see?
Wait, what?
No.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Jenna Bush, she's dabbling.
She's dabbling? Wait, what?
She's got to hit a couple mics. Yeah.
All right. That's our recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah, Google should, Jenna Bush's stand-up, because that's what is going down
right now. I don't want to see that. Jamie, this has been a lot of fun, as usual. Where can people follow you?
I can follow me on Twitter at HamburgerFun. You can follow my podcast on Twitter at BechdelCast.
What you guys got going on?
In the pipeline, we just did an episode on Superbad that's going to come out. And then this week we released our Shrek episode, which I've been waiting for my entire life.
Wow.
Very exciting. If you're a Shrek fan, if you're a Shrek the Musical fan, it's the episode for you.
What's Shrek the Musical?
Just oh get the
God.
Fuck out.
I'm gonna,
wait, what the fuck
I'm
is that? Flip.
Dude, Shrek the Musical
oh my
was
God, Jamie
on Broadway.
Just flipped over the table.
Yeah. There, I just
Yo, put that knife away. Yo, don't try and stab me.
Okay, so Shrek the Musical was on Broadway for 4 years, was a huge hit, won a ton of Tonys. Sutton Foster was in it. It was a huge fucking deal.
Who's Sutton Foster?
Sutton Foster is like... She was at one time like the queen of Broadway. Like,
oh,
why
gotcha.
Was she dressing up like an ogre?
See,
every
I'm
night?
Not touch. I mean, I'm not in touch with Broadway. So sorry about that. Sorry to the Shrek musical.
All my Shrek the Musical heads, keep your head up.
Keep
They're trying to force.
Miles, I'd ask you where people can follow you, but it's not like anyone's gonna want to after you asked.
Yeah,
what?
Seriously.
Shrek.
Don't worry. But if you're looking to find me, you will find me probably at Jenna Bush's next stand up set because I will have to see that with my bare eyes. But if you're more interested on the social media thing, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And, you know, shout out to everybody who reaches out because we love y'all.
Yeah. You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a fan page that is The Daily Zeitgeist. You can follow us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. And we have a webpage called dailyzeitgeist.com where you can find our footnotes of just every source that we have used for this conversation. You can go click on it. So if you think we're making shit up, we're not. Go click on that.
Jenna Bush did stand up.
Yeah, I guess that will be in our footnotes.
We will have a link
if there is a source on that. And before we go, I just wanted to, so we feel like an episode, about a week and a half ago or maybe 2 weeks ago, we said something in a way that implied that OxyContin was, bad for you. And we did not know. We said something in a way that implied that OxyContin was the most powerful painkiller on the market. And we had a listener, Mr. Cheese, on Twitter. His handle is at Jeremy_Heimke. Reach out and point out that there are many more powerful painkillers like fentanyl, Opana, oxymorphone. And the idea that OxyContin is the most powerful is actually killing people because they think, you know, fentanyl is less powerful and it's actually more powerful and people are ODing on that. Apologies for implying that. I think, you know, this was in a story where we were pointing out that the marketing work done by Purdue helped open the floodgates for all these dangerous painkillers, which is true, but it's not the only one, or even the most powerful. So be careful. And that's it. Thank you to Mr. Cheese for pointing that out to us. And that's going to do it for us for this week.
Season 5.
Yeah, season 5 is
Time
in the
flies.
Books, folks.
Yeah.
We are going to, that is 25 episodes. We will be back with our 26th on Monday.
Six.
So we will talk to you guys then.